BAM Radio Network.
The very deep pleasure that comes from creating and making something that's yours and expressing who you are as a human being is a tremendously powerful motivator.
What we know is that successful acquisition of reading and writing is really dependent on a solid background in oral language skills, and music is that thing that gives kids a lot of those oral language skills.
We do know that when children are actively making music, creating music, and engaged in music, they tend to do better overall.
Welcome to Music and Learning. I am Marianne Harmon. Welcome to BAM Radio, Dr. Hodges. We are glad you are here. I know people who have had a really hard time getting their children to read. They've tried everything. Can you tell our audience about the research you've done on music and how it benefits learning, specifically reading?
Music is certainly a very effective learning tool. It is not simplistically listening to music makes you smarter. That would be a gross misperception of the research. But certainly, we do know that when children are actively making music, creating music, and engaged in music, they tend to do better overall. They generally come from homes where the parents are very supportive of education, that they take the time and energy to support their kids, that they provide them with opportunities to go to museums or concerts or to take private lessons. So it's certainly a great learning tool in that way, but it mostly has value for its own sake, for what it does for the child in its own content.
This brings us to our title question then. When teachers and parents are concerned because children aren't reading, they're more prone to turn to things like programs and drills, but the actual spending time on the music could be more helpful, and these other things may not be as helpful. So specifically, like when they're in music class and they're clapping or marching, why is this helping with skills that will get them to be better readers?
Anything we do that the brain is actively involved in causes the brain to rewire itself over time. And when they're engaged in musical activities, there have been some very interesting research studies in which they took children about 6, 7, 8 year olds, did brain scans, and then half of them got active music lessons, taking violin lessons, taking piano lessons, and so on, and the other half did not. And they took a wide variety of cognitive assessments along the way and afterwards. And sure enough, brains did change. They can demonstrate clearly what happens in the brain as a result of that training. But also, when they looked at these cognitive assessments, they talk about what's called near transfer and far transfer. And so the non-musical cognitive behaviors that have the closest association with musical behaviors are the most strongly affected. And so in language, certainly speaking, for example, there's a lot of timing that's going on. We do know, for example, with dyslexic children, where the common perception is that it's a visual transposition of letters, it's actually as much or more so a timing mechanism that's gone a little bit haywire. And so kids who have music lessons who are dyslexic usually improve their timing and usually improve their reading skills as a result. So if that's good for dyslexics, it's also true for non-dyslexics. So that every child can improve timing and rhythmicity through musical activities, which then has a near transfer over to the rhythmic and timing aspects of language. Similarly, the prosodic aspects of language, the timbre of the voice, the inflection, the rising at the end for a question, are very pre-musical, because they involve many of the very same things that are engaged in musical processing. So once again, those are the things that are most likely affected when you study music.
I can speak to that from a real practical standpoint. I work with 1,000 children and their families every week in a kinder music classroom and homeschool my children, so I've been able to see the direct results. And I have a sensory child that had a lot of trouble reading because his brain could not organize sentences and words. And what we know is that successful acquisition of reading and writing is really dependent on a solid background in oral language skills. And music is that thing that gives kids a lot of those oral language skills. And music allows them to experiment with grammar rules, with the words in there, rhyming patterns. And we know that in order to do phonics well, they have to be able to rhyme, which is really picking apart words and breaking down sounds and breaking apart letter sounds. And, you know, in music, all those things that are similar in music to reading, the steady beat and cadence and rhythm, and even things like reading left to right, understanding that symbols have meaning. And what we know is that music is really enjoyable for children. So I think we should give teachers that tool and say, look, you've got these frustrated readers, let's give them the tool that they love anyway that uses all those same things that you need to do to learn to read. And then the kids having success in music, that stuff transfers. And as from a practical standpoint, we see that almost every day in our classroom.
What I want to comment on is something called melodic intonation therapy. This is a technique that speech-language pathologists use with brain-damaged individuals. They've lost the ability to speak, and very frequently, they're able to regain their speaking skills, and so they do it first in a sing-song fashion. Then they gradually smooth the contours down until their speech becomes more and more normalized. And the brain literature on language and music shows that there are essentially three different aspects. Some parts of the brain share the same part of the brain for both language and for music. Some are in what are called parallel areas where they're very nearby neighbors, and some are what are called dissociated, so they're in completely different parts of the brain. So language and music have a very complicated sort of arrangement of shared, parallel, and distinct networks. And music is much more diffuse in the brain, and by that I mean it's left and right, front and back, top and bottom. There isn't any such place as a music center that's a specific place in the brain. It's really scattered all over the brain. Language is also somewhat diffuse, but much more localized than music is. And so it stands to reason that when you're doing musical things, you're engaging, you know, wide areas of the brain all over the place, and that kind of activation surely does have some transfer, exactly as you said it. And the last thing I wanted to comment on is the brain doesn't grow in a jar in a vacuum up sitting on a shelf in a lab. It's inside a human being who has motivations, desires, who interacts with other human beings. And social learning is a very powerful tool. And so when your son or others is engaged in making music, rarely is that a solitary event. And even for musicians who spend a lot of time practicing by themselves, they always do it with the goal of making music with others and sharing music with others, even in an audience standpoint. So the social reinforcement and the absolute, not just fun in a superficial sense, but the very deep pleasure that comes from creating and making something that's yours and expressing who you are as a human being is a tremendously powerful motivator.
Knowing all of this, we still have the people that are the skeptics, and they want the hard fact proofs, the statistics that prove it. Now that you've presented a good case for why spending time on music can help improve reading, I want to make sure that we could provide our audience with some specifics on what a non-music teacher can do that would help a child to improve their reading skills by using music with them.
First, an important thing is just to do it, not to worry about it or fret about it or be concerned about it, just to do it, because there is considerable research, particularly with infants and newborns. When mothers sing lullabies to their children, it of course is not the musical quality in the sense of an operatic voice and a well-trained voice and perfectly in tune and stuff that's really critical. It's the bonding of mother and child, that they are sharing something that's very important that connects them, mother to child, and that extends, of course, past infancy. As adults, we're naturally self-conscious and we're worried if our voice doesn't sound so good, or we don't know all the lyrics, or we can't remember exact notes of the melody or something. Well, the child certainly doesn't know that, and they don't even care. They want their mom or their dad to be with them and to do with them. So the difference between a three-year-old child listening to a recording and a three-year-old child singing that same song with mom or dad, or frankly all three of them, is enormous. That, you know, the human interaction is what's really the key. And so I would definitely encourage all moms and dads to be very much hands-on, very active in singing and playing and being musically engaged with their children, because there's a tremendous amount of research which shows that is definitely what's important.
Thank you very much. We hope that those of you listening will use some of this very wonderful advice. You've been listening to Music and Learning with Marianne Harmon. Thanks for listening.
This program is produced by Jack Street Media as part of the Affiliate Nanocasting Network. Thanks for listening.